Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. We are here, All About Service Dogs, hosted by yours truly, Doc Pencil. And tonight we will be featuring Miss Brandy Paul, who is a trainer out of Georgia. And she will be discussing some of her experiences with training of service dogs in her organization. So you will want to stay tuned for that. Brandy, I want to thank you for stopping in and chatting with us tonight. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in and tuning in on time. And having said that, Brandy, why don't you go ahead and greet the people and give us a little introduction about yourself.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Brandy Paul. I am 21 years old. I just opened up a dog training business up here in northeastern Georgia. I first started learning about service dog training from a mentor of mine back when I was 16. So it's been about 5 years since I started training.
Okay. So why don't we just dive into it, and why don't we let the listening audience know about your total connection to the service dog world and how you became involved in the service dog world.
Okay. Well, when I was 9 years old, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which means that my body doesn't make insulin like it should. And since I have to try and figure out how much insulin I need, I have a lot of blood sugar spikes and drops. And then when I was about 14, I started developing a complication called hypoglycemic unawareness, which means that if my blood sugar goes high or low, I actually don't feel it anymore. So I started looking into diabetic alert service dogs, and I finally ended up getting one when I was 16. I took her to public school with me when I was a junior in high school. The other kids did not receive it very well, and there was a lot of bullying that went on. And the faculty also did not receive the dog very well. So I actually ended up going to alternative school for a while and trying to retrain that first dog, because she ended up becoming skittish of people because a lot of the other students would bother her in the hallways. I did end up having to rehome her because she became extremely protective of me. And then after that, I couldn't go without a dog, and I couldn't afford to replace that dog because at the time they were running about $7,000, and they've gone up since then. So the lady who trained the first dog, Shyla, she would call me and email me and coached me through training my second dog, Clank. And Clank has since retired, and he has passed on. He was a little older. And now I have a third service dog who is a German Shepherd, and her name is Shanti.
Okay. So you've been at this whole service dog thing for about 5 years with three of your own service dogs, and you're on your third service dog now.
Yep.
Great. Now, tell us a little bit about the way you went about choosing the particular dogs to be your service dogs, and tell me that as you are now, how you would go about picking a service dog if somebody was looking to get a service dog.
Well, it depends. There's two routes you can go with service dog training. You can either use a breeder or you can rescue a dog. My first service dog, she was from a breeder, and the next two were rescues. There's pros and cons to each one, though, because a breeder is obviously going to be breeding for good health. And a rescue, you don't really know what their health issues might be later in life. You don't know what their genetics are. You don't know what their past is or what they might have issues with.
Okay, let me try to ask the question a different way. How would you go about choosing a dog for a service dog?
Well,
what are you looking for in the dog, you know?
Oh, what am I looking for in a dog? I usually wouldn't start out with a dog that's anywhere over 2 years old. And you want the dog to be really friendly and outgoing because it's easier to tone down an overly friendly dog than it's got a shy one. I'm looking for a dog that's not easily startled by loud noises. If it's like alert dog, a lot of the time what we do is we'll just like throw a toy or a tennis ball. And the idea is if the dog is willing to hunt out the toy, then they're willing to hunt out the scent of a blood sugar level.
Okay, I guess I need to ask you the question. In your training, do you only train for diabetic alert dogs, or do you train others as well?
I train others. I have worked so far with diabetic alert dogs, mobility dogs, psychiatric service dogs, and hearing alert service dogs.
Okay. So, say I listen to the show tonight and I hear you and I'm impressed by you and I say, I want to work with this girl to get me the service dog that I need. What is going to be your conversation with me? How is that going to go?
Right now, since the business literally just started up this year, it hasn't grown a whole lot yet. So I don't have a facility where I can board and train dogs. So right now, what I'm doing is just taking service dog training clients on a local level, and we'll meet up and do training sessions. And they're kind of helping co-train the service dog since the dog has to stay with them because I don't have a kennel license to breed or to have dogs at my house.
Okay, so what would you say to me? What's the conversation like?
First, I would probably find out if you're anywhere local to me, and if not, then I would help you find someone who can help you better. And if you are local to me, then I would ask you to set up a consultation, and during that time, we would go over cost of training service dogs, finding an appropriate service training candidate, things that you might need from a service dog, that kind of thing.
Okay, great. So I'm right there in your town. I don't have a dog, but I do have a condition. And that's what I'm sharing with you. So keep talking to me to get me to the place where I can have a service dog.
Okay. First I would find out whether you wanted a small dog or a large dog, or if you had any certain breed in mind that you might want to work with. And then from there we would either look for a rescue or we would look for a good breeder.
Okay, let's say I'm real partial to Chihuahuas, and my main issue is I have mobility issues.
If your main issues are mobility issues, then mobility dogs have to be a certain size in order to do their job properly, because a lot of the times it's something called forward momentum pulling, which is where they just kind of pull you along a little bit so you don't have to spend as much energy walking. There's bracing, where they brace their bodies, and you can use them to kind of push yourself up off their shoulders. So they have to be a certain height and a certain weight to your height and weight.
Okay, great. Now, let me ask you, I know you're just starting up, you're in your first year, and so you're talking about right now, and that's good. It's good to be in the moment. So right now, the way your business is you pretty much assist owner trainers. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Now, with the owner trainers, how do you determine the dog that they have is the dog that they need? In other words, if that dog is going to be acceptable for the task that they're going to need it to do.
If they already had a dog of their own?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, if
or
it was
do
a
you even
dog,
work with that?
Well, if it was a mobility dog, again, the size would be a big factor. Also, the dog's personality, if it's going to be overwhelmed or stressed by loud environments, like being in a grocery store at the front where all the registers are beeping, that can stress a dog out sometimes. You want a dog that's going to be all those situations. And if it's crowded, you don't want them to be afraid of people. So you want a nice, outgoing personality for a dog.
Okay. I guess I need to backtrack a little bit because either I didn't catch it or you didn't share it. And if I didn't catch it, then others might not have caught it either. There was a time when you went from training and co-training your own dogs to where you said, you know what, I could be of help to training other people with their dogs. Tell me about that transition and how you came to the place you said, well, I think I can help these other people, and I think we'll just do something with that.
Okay. Well, the transition came, like I said, when that first dog ended up being ruined by the school, the other kids messing with her in the hallway so much, they would hit her as they walked by sometimes, and she became very afraid of people. So after I had trained my own service dog after that, I ran into some friends on the online service dog communities on Facebook. And there were people who were not very far from me who were owner training their service dogs, and they were running into some issues, and I volunteered to help them out a little bit. And then after that, they were like, oh, you're really good at this. Maybe you should consider it as a career. So that's kind of where that got started.
Okay, great. Now, is dog training now all of what you do, or is it like a sideline while you build it up?
I do both service dog training and obedience training, but that's it.
Well, that's great. Now, with obedience training, is there a certain curriculum you use, or do you train for rallies, or do you just train regular old pet obedience training?
Just regular old pet obedience training. I have three different obedience training packages that people can purchase, and each one and has a set number of tasks that the dog learns and then a set number of lessons.
Okay, good. I have been remiss. I should have done this earlier, but what is the name of your business?
The name of it is Dream Run Dog Training.
Dream Run Dog Training? Okay, now, sooner or later throughout the show, somebody's going to have a light come on, and they're going to say, I'd like to check out this young lady. How could they get in touch with you? How can they see what you're doing? Do you have an online presence or anything like that?
We have a Facebook page, and we also have a website. It's called dreamrundogtraining.com.
Okay, and the Facebook page is what?
The Facebook page is just Dream Run Dog Training, LLC.
Okay. Great, super. And so you're running your dog training school, or whatever you want to call it, as a business, not as a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, what do you see coming with your service dog training? Do you intend to continue to train the owner trainers and do owner-assisted training, or do you foresee taking the owner's dogs and boarding them and training them and giving them back, or do you foresee breeding and giving the dogs or rescuing and placing the dogs? What's your plan for the future of your service dog training?
My plan, hopefully, is to end up having my own facility with a kennel license so I can be able to board and train when I'm helping owner train, and also to be able to have fully trained dogs ready to go for when someone does need a dog and they don't already have one. And I would also like to be able to rescue some and train them and place them.
Okay, I think I heard you say everything except for breeding. You don't intend to breed.
No.
Or you do intend to breed.
I do not intend to breed.
Okay. So basically rescue, take in the owner's dog and give it back to them trained.
Yep.
And I guess those are the two options. Okay. In your experience, how long does it take to get the dog, say, from the shelter till it's completely public accessed and cast trained?
Generally, it takes about a year and a half to 2 years.
And you're looking at boarding a dog for that period of time?
Yes.
Okay. Great, great, great. Now, with your training, what curriculum are you looking at using? Or do you have a particular curriculum that you use?
What do you mean by a curriculum?
Well, there's a lot of different programs out there that folks can buy that they can use to train their dogs with. I don't want to say any names because nobody pays me for advertising, so I'm not going to advertise for them. But, you know, there's a lot of package deals that are sold to trainers and owner trainers to train dogs with. Do you use any of those, or do you just go from your experience and then you go, you know, grab whatever you need?
I go based off of experience. And if I do end up running into any trouble, I have dog trainer friends that I can rely on to ask for advice.
Oh, great. So you basically work on a network of different trainers and you bounce stuff off.
Yep.
All right, good. That helps me with this next question, which you might have already touched on, but I'm going to let you touch on it again. So when you were training your dog, and I ask this in such a way that you can answer it in a way that you're comfortable with, was your dog, or is your dog only trained for diabetic alert, or does it have other jobs?
She is trained for diabetic alert, and she also has a few tasks that are related to anxiety. Things like walking from behind, which is where she stands behind me so people can't come up behind me, or she alerts if someone is approaching from behind. She does what's called deep pressure therapy, where she will lay across my legs or my stomach to calm me down if I get really anxious. And she will find my mom if I need her to. And I think that's about it as far as psychiatric tasks.
Okay, great. Now, with these tasks in particular, that helps with this next question. Did you work with a trainer to train your dog for some of these tasks, or did you just do that all on your own?
I did that all on my own.
Okay. Now, say there's a person in your town who has come up with a need for a service dog, and they are wanting to owner train, all way owner train. They don't have any experience with dog training, but they read online that you should owner train, that you shouldn't trust programs, and you shouldn't pay dog trainers because, you know, they're overpriced and they're not all that qualified, and they're not certified. There's no certification for them, so you never know. So this is what this person has heard, and this is where this person's at, and they have a condition. Maybe seizures are involved, and they're going to owner train. But maybe they're listening to the show tonight, trying to get some encouragement or the motivation to owner train. What would you say to this person about owner training and or the need or the benefit of working with a trainer?
I would probably say that training a service dog is not like training a dog just for obedience around the house. It's a lot more complex, and having a trainer with the knowledge of how to do that is a huge benefit. And if a trainer can show you dogs that they have already trained, then they've proven that they know what they're talking about, and they can be trusted with your dog. And I think that would be a very valuable asset, especially for your first time when you may not have the knowledge or understanding of how a dog's mind works.
Okay, so let's say you told them that, and they're like, okay, that makes a little bit of sense. But then there's the cost issue. These dog trainers are so expensive. And why should I pay them to do something when I could read a book or watch a few YouTube videos to do it myself?
I would tell him that watching a YouTube video or reading a book, you may run into some things that maybe wasn't in the book or maybe isn't on the video, some troubleshooting issues that may come up. And in that situation, you may not know what to do. And having a trainer there, they can help you fix the problem a lot faster.
Okay. That's good. I don't know if you see this, but I'm trying to lead you along the way to help you build value in what you're doing so that maybe somebody can see the value of why work with a trainer. If you were a program, I'd say, why work with a program? So we have all kind of people in the service dog community, people like yourself who started out and learned how to train their own dog from working with a trainer, and grew to the place where they started helping other people to train their own dogs. And to me, that's a super kind of thing, because you've been there, you know where the person is coming from, and you know a bit about what they need. So that's a great way to find a trainer to help you work. Now, do any of the trainers or yourself that you work with, that you network with, are any of them AKC evaluators?
I do not believe so.
Okay. Is there a particular public access standard that you work towards, or when do you say that a dog is okay for public access?
When the dog can walk calmly through a crowded area, when they can hold a sit stay or a down stay at 20 feet for 30 seconds and then go to the owner when the owner calls them, and whenever they can go into a restaurant and lay under the table and not beg for food or solicit attention from people who walk by.
Now, it sounds to me like you just read from a list of a particular public access exam. Are you aware of that, or is this just certain tasks that your dog was trained to? So you said, yeah, these are good tasks that public access must need. Or where did you get that from?
It's what the trainer who taught me to train. It's what she used.
Oh, okay. And that's, again, part of that good idea of working with a trainer. But myself as a trainer, I did recognize those tasks. Some of those are from the AKC Canine Good Citizen, and some of those are from certain public access evaluations from certain groups. Again, I'm not going to say the groups because they don't pay me to say them. I do happen to be an AKC evaluator, so I don't mind saying that. But let's see. Okay, we are about midway through the show, so I will go ahead and make this announcement. For those who have called in, and those who are listening and may call in later, you can call in at 646-668-2499 and listen to the show. And that way you don't have to be tied to your computer. And if you need to, you know, go out, you can be mobile and listen to the show. Or if you have a question or a comment that you might want to ask or add, once you've called in, you can press the number 1 on your phone, and that will alert me that you have a question or a comment that you want to ask or add. And we'll get you on the air and let you ask your question or make your comment. So that is there for you, and we are glad to do it. Now, Brandy, let's see. Tell us a little bit if there are any Facebook groups, service dog groups that you are in or that you might run. Could you tell us about any of those that have been helpful or that may be helpful so that maybe other people might find some help?
Okay. Well, I'm actually involved in multiple groups on Facebook, one of which is called Service Dog Training Advice, and that one has been very, very helpful to me personally. If I run into any kind of issues, I can post on there, and there are some very, very knowledgeable people on that group, and they usually come up with some pretty good suggestions. Another group that I'm involved in is Service Dog Handlers Safe Haven, and that one's really good for service dog handlers themselves who may just want to talk about any public access issues they've had or anything their dog may have done that they need help with, or just anything service dog related can go there.
Okay. So those are two decent groups. I am familiar with one of them, not familiar with the other one. But anytime you can touch base with people of similar place and position that might can help you get through where you are, it lets us know that we're not alone and there is help. So no matter where you acquire your dog from, or no matter what your situation might be as far as disability, ability, or what have you, then you might feel at times isolated. You might feel alone. Maybe you're the only one with this problem. Maybe you're the only one in this situation. And it helps to be able to have a network, a group of people who may or may not have gone through the same thing, but can let you know, hey, you're not alone. We're in this together, and we can work it out. Somebody can help you find answers to where you might be stumped. This can really be good if you happen to be an owner trainer without the assistance of a trainer, or if you have gotten yourself a program dog and come to find out that the program, once they gave you the dog, you can't see them anymore. You can't get to them anymore. Oftentimes these groups can help and assist you along the way. Now, Brandy, if you were able to talk to somebody about looking for a trainer, what are some things that you would tell them to look for as they look for a trainer?
I would tell them to look on the trainer's website and look for any sort of evidence you can find that the trainer actually can produce results. A lot of the time, trainers who are good at what they do will have videos posted on their websites of dogs that they have worked with. A lot of the time there's actually before and after videos, so you can actually see the progress that they have made with a certain dog.
That's it?
That's about all I can think of right now.
So having said that, am I correct in guessing that you have a website and you have videos with before and after on your website of dogs that you have worked with?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I say that because usually people that say that have that. Now, myself, I don't have a website and I don't have videos of dogs that I've worked with. And so somebody might listen to you and say, well, I'm not going to work with that doc guy. He don't have no videos. But, you know, I wouldn't say it like you said it. That's why I gave you the opportunity to say that. Now, let's talk a little bit about law and service dog law. Well, before we talk about that, let's talk and get this nailed down. You only work with people there locally. Is that what I heard you to say?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. So we'll talk in terms of local law, because you don't work with people, say, in Florida, so you don't need to know what Florida says. But so as it is there in Georgia, what issue is certification of the service dog there in Georgia? Has that become an issue? Is there a problem there? Or talk about that a little bit.
Georgia state law actually doesn't require any special tags or certifications for service dogs. I know there are other states that they have state-issued tags for service dogs, but Georgia is not one of them.
Okay. Is there a conversation about certification there in Georgia? Like when I asked you about trainers, you said, hey, go to their website and check out their videos. Is there conversation in Georgia? Hey, if a service dog is a real service dog, then it will have X, X, and X. Or if a service dog is a real service dog, then it will have come from one of these places. Or, you know, things like that. Is that conversation being had in Georgia?
Nothing I'm aware of.
Really? Wow. Do y'all have Walmarts in Georgia?
Yes, we do.
Okay, because Walmart gets in a whole bunch of trouble about service dogs and fake service dogs. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, well, come on then. Then that conversation's being had. Come on, Brandy, work with me.
Well, we have run into many, many small dogs in grocery carts in Walmart, and they almost never have leashes on. And they almost always end up barking and lunging at my service dog, Shanti. And my dog doesn't really do anything. She doesn't really mind it. But it's not the most pleasant thing to have to deal with, having a small dog be barking at you in the middle of Walmart. A lot of the time, the managers, I think they're kind of afraid to do anything because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble again.
Uh-huh. Now we're talking like we're two people who are on the same page. Okay. So, being as you work with owner trainers, how do you build the confidence in the handler that they can represent their dog as a qualified service dog in public access and not get in any trouble with their dog in public access because of the amount of people out there fakes and phonies?
I always make sure they have a very firm grasp on the laws and what the laws say about real service dogs and fake service dogs. Because in Georgia, it is actually illegal to let your dog bark at and harass a service dog like that. So if their dog to react and the store manager said something, they could be like, hey, that dog is harassing my service dog, and that's illegal. That dog needs to leave the store.
Okay, great. And so basically you build up your clients with knowledge of the laws, and you help them know that they can advocate for their dog, and they don't have to let their dog be abused by another dog.
Right.
Cool. Now, let's see. Way back 5-6 years ago, when you decided, okay, maybe I'll do better with a service dog, what were the determining factors to help you decide that you needed a service dog? And then how did you decide on the particular service dog that you got?
What helped me decide a lot was the whole hypoglycemic unawareness thing. The only options I really had at the time were something called a continuous glucose monitoring system, which is abbreviated CGMS, or a service dog. and I was already on an insulin pump, and a CGM would have been a second stick every 3 days, another thing to wear 24/7. It would be basically like having a second insulin pump, and I didn't really want to deal with that. So I decided to start looking into service dogs because it just seems a lot easier for me to handle. And I actually spent a couple of months, I think, trying to find a good, reputable company that had good reviews and good results with their service dogs. And when I did finally find them, they were all the way out in Oklahoma, which is why it took 2 years to be able to finally get the service dogs.
Okay. And that first dog was a program dog?
Yes.
Okay. So you had to go through the fundraising and all that good stuff for that dog?
Yes, I did.
And let's see. How do I dance around this question? When it came time to get your second dog, and your second dog was from the trainer there in your town. Am I right on that?
The second dog was when I first learned to train. It was the one that the trainer who trained the first dog helped me train him over the phone and email, and she would make videos of how to do stuff for me.
Oh, okay. So you went from program trained to trainer assisted.
Yeah. And then the third one was completely owner trained.
Yeah, I'm liking that progression a little bit. I'm liking that progression.
yeah.
Now, you started, I'm sure, training for diabetic alert dogs because that's what you knew. And then your needs changed. And the anxiety became an issue. And did you realize on your own that the dog could help you because the dog started to help you? Or
no, I actually learned it from the service dog groups on Facebook. I had seen other people talking about how to do it. So a lot of the tasks that I taught her, I learned how to train from those groups. I would find people who had owner trained their psychiatric service dogs and be like, hey, how did you train this task, or how did you train this task? And they would kind of walk me through it.
Okay, there goes again another benefit of finding some decent and good service dog groups online. Okay, wow. I did have a question, and I should have written it down because it has eluded me. So in your mind, as you train dogs, service dogs, what five commands should every service dog know?
The first one would be sit, the second one down, third one would be stay, and then heel, which is walking on a loose leash, and leave it.
Okay, I think a lot of people would agree with you on most of those. And if there was a top 10, those definitely would be in the top 10. And let's see. So, are you a... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to ask you to repeat that because you cut out for a second.
Oh. Are you a person that is big on vest and patches or not?
What's big on what?
Vest and patches.
I don't think so.
Okay, let me ask this. What's your position on vesting of dogs?
Usually I do inside, but I know some people prefer it on the between right and left-hand side healing. So I guess it depends on whichever side you're most comfortable having the dog in, and then you put the patches on the outside where the public will see them, pay attention to them.
Randy, I think maybe your phone battery or something is going down because you are coming in and out. That's not on this end. That's on your end. So I'm going to ask you on the vesting again. You said you're not definitely the person that pushes vesting, but you had something else to say on vesting. What was it?
I said that some people prefer walking their dog on the right side, and some people will switch sides. So it just kind of depends on which side you favor having the dog on.
Okay. I'm not sure if you misunderstood my question or not. The question is whether or not to wear a vest.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You cut out for a second. I thought you asked what side to have patches on.
No.
I honestly do prefer having dogs vested, or at least have a leash slide that says service dog, because I think it cuts down on a lot of people who will be like, oh, that person is allowed to bring their dog in the store. That means I must be allowed to bring my dog places too.
Okay. And an extension on that question is, how do you feel about the little service dog ID cards and those kind of things that some people ask you to produce, and the law says you don't have to have them? How do you feel about those cards?
I'm not really a fan of them, because once a place asks for one and someone actually produces one, the next person that comes along may not have one, and then they're going to have an even bigger issue trying to gain access to the place.
Okay. Everybody has their own ideas on these things. I'm asking you about yours so we can put them all in the pot so that people can say, yeah, see, she agrees with me. Or, she agrees with me. Okay, so we've talked about your diabetic alert training and your psychiatric service dog training, a little bit of that. Now, you also said that you will train mobility dogs and you train hearing alert dogs. Am I leaving anything else out that you also train for? Okay. Let's talk a minute about mobility dogs. We touched on it a little earlier. What are some of the tasks that you train for mobility dogs?
Well, we touched on something earlier in the forward momentum pulling. Some other things they can do would be drop objects. They can retrieve medications that you may need. They can be trained to turn on and off light switches so you don't have to walk across the room. So one girl who actually trained her dog to find a trash can.
Okay, are you still talking because your phone is going in and out on me?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on one second. Let me try moving around a little bit. Okay, can you hear me better?
Oh, yeah. I hear you strong now.
Okay, good.
And so the tasks that you train for mobility are?
Okay, there would be the bracing and the forward momentum pulling that we touched on earlier. There would be picking up dropped objects. They can pull open cabinets and retrieve things from bottom shelves. They can retrieve things from bottom shelves in stores. They can be trained to open a refrigerator and retrieve a bottle of water if you need water to take your medication. They can be trained to turn on and off light switches so you don't have to get up and go do that yourself. Just that kind of stuff.
Okay. And now with your hearing alert dogs, what are some of the tasks that you train for with them?
It depends a lot on what each person needs, because the people I've worked with have had different degrees of hearing loss. Some of them are able to hear sirens and some are not. So it's kind of what important sounds they need to hear, like smoke alarms and sirens or cell phones ringing, just the stuff that whatever their level is that they can't hear anymore, we'll train specific alerts for those things. Like one girl that I worked with, she couldn't hear a knock on the door because her hearing was almost completely gone. So she didn't know when someone was knocking on her door. So her dog learned to come jump on her when someone was knocking at the door and then run back to the door.
Okay, great. Now let me ask this. This is a big question that a lot of people have, and you've experienced it yourself. You as a trainer that assists owner trainers, you're not going to see this right away so much, but when you get into your fully training dogs and placing them back with the client, then you're going to see this a lot more. But the funding issue becomes an issue. Do you have some ideas, you might even have it on your page, I don't know, ways of raising funds so that people can afford the service dog and the service dog training?
I had a lot of help with my fundraising. I know raffles can work really well, but that's pretty much the extent of my knowledge on fundraising.
Well, it's good to have a lot of help. You are blessed. Blessed, blessed, blessed. And I'm not going to ask you to reveal your help, because if you wanted to tell me, you'd have told me already. So we're not going to ask that. But let's see. As far as cost for acquiring and training a service dog, would you agree or disagree with an owner trainer that they can do it for less, just as good as a program dog or a trainer-assisted dog?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Well, we worked up to it.
Well, I guess it would kind of depend on whether or not they've had any experience training, because I think if a person, it's their first time owner training, I don't think they're necessarily going to get the same results as going with a program dog or trainer-assisted training. I don't think they would get the results quite as quickly as they would need to, which means they would probably spend more time and money training the dog before the dog would be fully trained. So it might possibly even out if you have no experience. If you have the experience, I would say you probably could do it.
And if you have the experience, you're saying you probably could do it because you would not be paying the training cost.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, well, we have come to the place and time on the radio clock where I need to give you an opportunity to speak your mind and to cover anything that I might not have addressed that you might want to address with the audience. We have about 5 minutes left, and I want to give that to you so that you can feel like this has been a good use of your time. Go ahead and speak on whatever you might feel is important right now.
If you're considering getting a service dog, I would definitely encourage you to talk to other people who have service dogs because it is such a huge life change. I mean, you can't really go into the store and grab some milk and come out anymore because you're going to have a ton of people asking all kinds of questions because they're not used to seeing dogs in the grocery store, you know? So in some cases, if you already have anxiety problems, I do know of people who have opted not to go the service dog route just because they feel that all the extra attention the general public would give them would be too much for them to handle. So you got to kind of weigh all the pros and cons of what a service dog would mean for you.
So quick and succinct you are. Okay. Now, did I cut you off, or do you have more for us?
I think that's about all I can think of.
Okay. Now, I don't want to get a nasty little note saying, well, that girl came on your show and you didn't even let her talk. Okay, let's see. I can do this. So, a person looking at getting the service dog, they may or may not be able to train them. They may or may not need help. And they may or may not be able to do it as efficiently and effectively for the money as with help, depending on who they are. Now, what is your opinion on service dogs being cross-trained for other things?
Well, I don't really have anything against it because my dog is cross-trained. I think the only thing about it is it takes longer because you have more tasks to train.
Okay, when I say cross-trained, I'm not talking about service dog tasks. I'm talking about he's a service dog, but he might also be a therapy dog. He's a service dog, but he might also be a rescue dog. He's a service dog, but he might also be a protection dog. That's what I mean by cross-trained.
It kind of depends on what being cross-trained for. I've seen a lot of discussions about service dogs being cross-trained as protection dogs. There seems to be a lot of speculation that it's not legal, but I don't know that everyone's ever provided actual evidence, but I don't think it would be that great of an idea to do protection dog training. Therapy dog training, I think if the dog is capable of doing it, then it would be a good idea. But some dogs, when people start petting them, they just completely lose focus on their handlers, and then if they're a medical alert dog, then they might miss an alert for their handler, and that probably won't end very well. But if it's a dog that's really good and can leave whoever's petting them to go back and do what they need to do with their handler and then go back to being a therapy dog, that's actually what my second dog would do. We took him up to the nursing home, and he would go up there and he would socialize. And if my blood sugar went low or high, he would leave whoever was petting him, come alert me, and then go back to being a therapy dog. So I think some dogs can do it, but I think others just can't.
Okay, super. And how do you feel about service dogs who are also show dogs?
I actually know a few dogs who are both service dogs and show dogs. I don't really see any problems with it. I mean, it seems to work out pretty well for them. If the dog does some kind of service dog task or alert in the ring, usually the judges will understand and not dock off points for any of it. And I don't think it really affects their ability to be a service dog either.
What about if he's an intact male and there happens to be in-season females around? Because you have to be an intact if you're going to be a show dog. And So what if he is that intact male and there are females around that are in season? Could that affect his ability to do his task?
So far, the ones I've seen haven't really been affected by it. I don't know what their owners did to train them, but whatever they did pretty good.
Okay. And that's cool because, you know, these are, I'm just throwing at you different discussions that I know take place. And, you know, different questions that are posed to those of us who are trainers and those of us who are programs and such as that. Now, without bad-mouthing a program too much, I want you to take a minute to do a little self-promoting and to share why it might be better for a person who lives in your town to have you work with them to train their dog as opposed to getting a program dog.
Well, I think owner training along with a trainer, trainer assisted, I think it honestly can help build a better relationship between the dog and the handler. I think in the long run it might be a little more cost effective.
And or period?
Do what?
I said and or period. I didn't know if you were just gathering your thoughts or if you were done with that thought.
Pretty much done with that thought.
Okay. Well, I've had you on the hot seat a little bit. And I don't like pushing my anxiety people too far because I don't want you to have a fit while you're on my show. So I am going to give you time to do some closing remarks. And while you're thinking about what you might say for closing remarks, let me go ahead and remind the people that if you call in at 646-668-2499 and you have a question or a comment that you wanted to add to the show, press number one on your phone. And that lets me know that you want to speak. That's kind of like raising your hand in a classroom. Old teachers' habits, they never die. So you'll do that. And while Brandy gives her closing and final thoughts, and then if we don't have any questions, we'll close out the show. If we do have questions, then we'll let you know. So, Brandy, go ahead, give your final thought and wrap it up.
Okay. Well, if you are thinking of getting a service dog, like I said, definitely find some people to talk to, be it on Facebook, someone you just see out in public. Usually they're pretty willing to talk. Just talk about it and see. Think about how it's going to affect your life because it is going to be a very, very big change taking a dog everywhere with you. And if you're going with a program or a trainer, definitely do your research because I know there are a lot of companies out there who don't do the best of training, but they still charge a lot of money. So definitely be careful.
I tell you what, you just end a sentence and you just leave it hanging and just have folks leaning in for your next little words. But okay, that is super. That is great. Yes, no matter how you decide to go, do your research and know if you can own or train, if that is the best for you and your dog. If you are going with a trainer, make sure you study that trainer. Make sure you are confident and comfortable with the trainer. and that your dog is comfortable and confident with the trainer. Or if you go with a program, study the program. Make sure they can produce what you are asking them to produce, what you need them to produce. Now, Brandy, we're going to let you off the hook because we don't have anybody who's called in with a question or a comment. So you don't have to be nervous anymore. Old Doc will take it from here. And in taking it from here, I want to invite everybody back for tomorrow's show. Tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about grooming of your service dog. And maybe we'll get in some other things. But we're going to talk about grooming, maybe get some grooming tips and some cost-saving measures to grooming so that we don't have such public access challenges. Now, not all service dogs are out in public. Some are just at home. But even if your dog is at home and only at home, there's still some things you want to do to groom it. And we're going to talk to a professional groomer. And we're going to get some ideas and some things. And we're going to just have a good time with that. That's on tomorrow. Now, as far as tonight, I want to thank Brandy Pauls for talking with us tonight and for breaking through all her anxiety and nervousness and all that and sharing with us and letting us know what she's doing up there in Georgia and that she's inviting those in her area to check her out and see if she can be of service to you because she would like to build her business because there's no sense in being in business if you don't have clients. So let's see if we can't get her phone to ring a little bit. So, Brandy, thank you for being with us tonight. I want to thank my audience for listening and for tuning in and for being here and consistent with the show. Tell your friends, family, and neighbors to tune in tomorrow. And we'll do it all over again. Thank you. God bless you. Love yourself. Love your dog. And love each other. Good night.